You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. This is episode 111. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, as opposed to Jodie Whittaker, who's a woman who... It's Mark Mulcaster. How you doing, man?
It's 11-1.
11-1, is that what it is?
Oh, Hobbit numbers.
Hobbity time.
Hobbit numbers. 11-1. Yeah. I was wondering where you're going with that.
Sorry for joking. Laughing at my own joke there. Yeah. That's terrible. How you doing?
Yeah, especially that one. I mean, that was dreadful.
I know.
I'm very well, thanks, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. I've had a good weekend. It's been a family-focused weekend this week because the next sort of 6-7 weeks, it's just all go, go, go with conventions, which we'll talk about in a minute. So it was nice to have a family-focused one. So it was my cousin's 40th birthday. I thought he'd figured it out and he hadn't, so it was a proper surprise. So nice weekend away down south, so really good. How about you?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, had a good day yesterday. Didn't really do a huge amount. Did go and see a film, which wasn't James Bond and wasn't Star Wars, believe it or not. It was The Last Duel, which is Ridley Scott's new epic. Medieval 14th century, he said, she said, with Matt Damon. So, yeah, the casting, excellent. Not great. But, you know, Jodie Comer and Adam Driver, you know, they knocked it out of the park, as you would imagine they would do. Brilliant. So, but yeah, apart from that, it's been kind of fairly straightforward and nice and easy, which, you know, as you said, we've got 5 or 6 weekends on the trot of events and comic cons and stuff. I'm kind of be quite glad for it, I reckon.
Yeah, totally. We you talk about cinema with former Star Wars, or maybe future, we don't know, Star Wars actors. We saw on Friday Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Which, of course, directed by Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Starring Woody Harrelson. Plenty of Star Wars connections in that one. That was nuts. The film made no sense and never even pretended it wanted to, but was just so much fun. So far out there, full on. Great fun.
I haven't seen the first one. All I can say is, and obviously, you know, I wasn't going to go around and ask people, and it certainly wasn't for The Last Duel, but my cinema was absolutely freaking rammed yesterday. Went like 4:30 in the afternoon and it was just rammed. I'd imagine it's probably James Bond as well as Venom. It's quite nice to see, actually. And obviously with the Batman trailer, which came out, it was really reassuring to see that. That was like, you know, at the end of that, it just said in cinemas only and stuff like that. So it seems like hopefully big blockbusters will be staying in the cinema first and not just going straight to streaming, which I think the worry was kind of 6 months ago.
Exactly the same with us. Venom was packed. We were surprised it was a 5:30 showing on a Friday night. So you kind of, you know, it was in Tamworth, which is, you know, nearby town to us, and busy as people are leaving, commuters are leaving town and heading back to the M42 and heading out of town. So we're thinking, it's going to be fairly quiet. Nope. Car park was packed.
Busy.
Cinema was very busy.
It's great.
Very encouraging to see. You just mentioned about forthcoming conventions. Got some good news this week that DJ Elliot's coming over to MCM London.
Wicked.
So to do some stuff over there, which we will both be at.
Yes, we will. I'll be there Friday and Sunday with the 501st UK Garrison and the Real Icons. And are you going to be there with me, or are you going to be on there on Saturday?
Well, typical. You're there Friday and Sunday and I'm only there on Saturday. So typical.
God's sakes.
So,
yeah.
So unless something changes, and who knows, then we might miss each other at that one. But there are other Panther trackers there. I think Brian's there Saturday, Sunday, and Matt's there on Sunday. So you'll certainly see those guys.
I'll see them. Wicked. Yeah, be a little mini Panther fest. Maybe what I do is, because I don't know how we're going to record next week, but if I just record all my stuff on Friday and leave it on a USB stick hanging up somewhere, then you can pick it up and then you can try and fit your words in around what I said. How about that?
Well, you know, in the toilet, it's like the second stall from the right. Just leave it the underside of the cistern and I'll just lift up the lid.
Business as usual then.
So any cool stuff coming to your collection this week?
I had, from Hasbro Pulse, I had my 6-inch Han Solo figure, which is for Power Force 2. 50th anniversary jobby, and he looks nice and cool. I had the Luke Skywalker one the other couple of weeks back, and that's been it this week. It's been a really quiet month, and I don't know why.
I've had the Life Day Treasury turn up this week.
Cool.
From our regular Fantha contributor, Eric Onkenhout, sent it across from the States. Thank you again for that, Eric. Really appreciate that. And a few of the little knickknacks, nothing crazy big, has turned up. I've started getting, I think I mentioned it before, that I started getting the, obviously now you get audio, like Audible do stuff on for the books, audio books. And then before that, we'd get them on CD, which they still do, of course. Before that, of course, they were on cassettes. So
true.
I'd got a few of the UK ones. I've always preferred the American ones. I think the layout's nicer in the cardboard boxes, but I've started to get the UK ones, and that's just become my thing. The last 2 weeks, I've just been hunting them down. So filling in a few gaps there. So I had a few of those turn up.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
Carl Weathers is part of The Mandalorian Season 3. He's mentioned this week that he's back on set to start filming. Great news, of course. And we have discussed, you know, Season 3 Mando before, and the fact that there's a lot of returning faces coming in and familiar storylines to pick up, which is going to be fascinating to see where they all go. But this week, and you know a little bit more about this because you're in the industry, there's been rumours of strikes, rumours of stoppages on sets, that some people working on the films aren't being properly recompensed, they're not being given reasonable working hours and working rates. It's not the scenario that you might expect for big companies to be making people work under. It sounds like those have abated. What have you heard on this score?
Right, so this is to do with the International Alliance of Theatre Stage Employees. And there's basically some kind of disagreements with them and the, like, the producers. But from what I heard and what I've read, they've come to some kind of agreement, and they're not necessarily now going to have to go on strike, which is quite good, because obviously that will put the brakes on any kind of series or film really being produced in the US, and especially in around Hollywood. To a certain degree, those who get into film and TV production, be it in, you know, actual production or even in post-production, there's a certain level of acceptance and almost expectation that you kind of, you know, you have to fall on your sword every now and again, and you have to work for long hours and, you know, the unsociable hours and stuff like that. Yeah. And you have to fit it in around what needs to be done. Ultimately, sometimes call times can be really early because you need to get, you know, a certain time of day if you're shooting it out, kind of like in, you know, location and stuff like that. Not so much now on the volume. So that kind of stuff obviously has an impact. And then if your schedule's so, like, heavy that actually then you don't get enough time off, or you're not being paid extra or anything like that, then it's a problem. And the thing is with America in particular, you know, Hollywood entertainment and all that, you know, there's guilds and there's unions and stuff like that. So, you know, back when Star Wars was filming in, you know, 76, they would get to the end of the day and they'd do like a 9-to-5 day, and George would say, can we run over for 15 minutes? And basically they'd have to vote, and obviously the crew would always vote no, partly because they just didn't really quite get what Star Wars was about, and I think they didn't really quite like George. But anyhow, so that's been hopefully averted for the time being. That should mean that there shouldn't be any form of delays really in any productions going forward. I mean, you think back to, I think it was 2012, we had the Screenwriters Guild strikes. Yeah. And that was a big issue because ultimately, if you don't have a script to write, you don't have anything to shoot. So you're completely stuck. There's been a lot of people have been rallying around this, at least kind of acknowledging that there are issues with wages and hours worked and stuff like that. So hopefully this is going to be a positive thing for the future. As positive of, obviously, as seeing Carl Weathers return for season 3 of The Mandalorian.
Exactly. He's also back behind the camera directing as well. So everything you've just said completely backs up the thought that these things need to be squared off. These things need to be in place. Good that this is sorted. Good that people can work in the correct conditions. But like you say, in that industry, it is a feast or famine industry as well. There's no guarantee you're ever going to get that next gig. It's a balance to make and an understanding that needs to be there. It's not a 9-to-5 life, is it?
No, exactly. As Q says in No Time to Die. What's interesting was that the whole kind of staff production for Mando Season 3 has been a bit vague. So obviously a lot of people were saying Mandalorian Season 3 has finally started production, but actually it doesn't necessarily say that. It just means that it started production for Carl Weathers. So for, you know, however many episodes he's going to be directing, exactly, and maybe however many episodes he's actually going to appear on screen.
Yeah, there's no, like I say, there's no guarantee. He might be in just a couple of episodes later on in the season. It's not like he was in every episode of season 1 or every episode of season 2.
No.
So you're quite correct. Yeah, it could be a little bit up and a little bit down. But either way, he's coming back, he's directing, which is great because the episodes he did before was really top draw. So that's good news. And good news on getting all the unionised stuff sorted out, because like you say, it's slightly different in the UK as it is in the States or anywhere else around the world. Of course, it's all kind of individual to the territory, but good that that's been sorted out.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Fantatrax.
There was another Star Wars project that launched this week. Star Wars Galaxy of Creatures. Q, cute as cute can be, arrives on a Thursday on Star Wars Kids Channel. They've released a couple of episodes so far, one about Banthas, one about Porgs. Have you watched them yet? I haven't yet watched them. I've watched the trailer, but not watched the episodes. But my understanding is that they won't take much longer than it takes to make a cup of tea to watch them.
That is correct. Yeah, I've seen two episodes. I've seen the Banthas and the Porgs episode. They're like 2 minutes each. Yeah, it's kind of a Galaxy of Adventures kind of thing. It's real super light. It's content for kids. And, you know, go back to Return of the Jedi, you know, and George Lucas saying, you know, dare to be cute. This is as cute as it gets. You know, they released a whole chunk of fluffy stuffed toys, you know, with the announcement as well. So, yes. of course, there's a marketing time. It's quite fun. You've kind of got this kind of droid that's going around, kind of like looking at, you know, the different creatures. And he cleans a Bantha, and then he, for the episodes with Porgs, which was interesting, it was set on Batuu and not on Acto, which has seemed a bit random. He's just trying to basically train a herd of, you know, herd of Porgs to do anything, which of course is like, I guess, trying to herd a load of cats around. So it's, you know, but it's fun. It's, you know, it's... I'm sure hopefully it's, you know, it all can resonate with like the younger audience, but it's fun. And that's what Star Wars needs to be at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's cute. Like you say, they've done a couple of sort of kid focused mini animations in the past. This one, we've looked at Porgs and Banthas already. We get two a week. I don't know what we'll get next week, but we're getting a mixture of Blurgs, Charhounds, Kowaki and Monkey Lizards, Minox, Nexu, Porgs, Rankles, Tauntauns, Tuca Cats, Vorpax and Wompers. So there's a nice mixture of creatures. Hopefully that will take Ari, SFR3, the droid that we follow, around the galaxy to different locations. Fingers crossed. But yeah, it's cute. But yes, I was very clear when they did the blurb for this that they were mentioning, don't forget, Mattel are releasing a line of plush toys, and there's a line of accessories and T-shirts and home goods. So I think it is as well. Definitely very much tied in. This 12-episode run is very much tied in with the merchandise, and we put some of those on Fanta so you can have a look. And they are really, really cute. I do like the Ari, the droid. He's a bit like a pit droid, isn't he? That sort of droid.
Yeah, he is. I mean, that's what I thought he kind of was. I thought it was maybe like a stylized version, but I'm sure there will be some kind of data bank entry which say that he's something slightly different, you know, because then it's a different twist. Those kind of kids' fluffy soft toys are slightly more stylized and I'd say younger kid orientated, whereas there's a range of these kind of stuffed toys already for Galaxy's Edge, which are a little bit different. So, you know, they look a little bit more, I suppose you say, accurate or screen accurate. I don't really know. I mean, for toys, you know, so.
You're going to play with them either way.
Of course. Yeah, I'm going to buy myself a basket of Porgs.
Fantatrax. War of the Bounty Hunters is nearly at an end. Crimson Rain kicks off in December. We put a piece on that, solicitations for December on the site. But they've now announced that there is, as we knew, a third part of the trilogy, Hidden Empire. It will come in 2022. If Crimson Rain is another five-parter, which we guess it will be, then you'll probably be getting that Easter time, I would imagine. It looks like, from the image that we posted, there's the Executor and a bunch of Imperial TIE Fighters and Rebel ships battering each other and other vehicles. It doesn't just look like Rebel ships. There's a big variety of vessels going in there. Looks like this could be something very, very special. Charles Soule's once again involved. He kind of refers to it as the Kira trilogy, which is very interesting. So what are your thoughts on that? We did kind of talk a little bit about this in a roundabout way last week when the question we had from Paul from Australia was saying, you know, what do you think the Emperor's plans for Darth Maul are? And we kind of spun out about how involved the Empire could be in that and so on and so forth. Do you think this kind of backs up, to a degree, that thought process?
Possibly, yeah. Or, I mean, I suppose it all kind of comes down to what happens in the Crimson Rain series, doesn't it, really? I'd probably say, looking at this image, that the Rebels have probably got the upper hand a smidge. So I wonder if maybe Kira throws her lot in with the Rebels. I'm guessing this is going to be either before Return of the Jedi or maybe during the events of... You know, so maybe we jump to that point when Han's defrosted from his carbonite block and maybe he finds a way to kind of like recruit her really quickly. Because, I mean, again, it's like we assume that everybody flies directly from Tatooine to the Rebels
fleet.
There could be a little side step or even just a holo transmission and just kind of say, hey, remember me? Maybe get on board. I don't know. I mean, it kind of doesn't seem like that Kira is being positioned from what we've seen in War of Bounty Hunters as being like, you know, somebody who's going to side with the Empire willingly.
I love that thought process that this could take place within Jedi, because if you think back to Force Awakens era, the way it was spun was quite clever because Battle of Endor felt like the big final epic monster mash and that's it. The Death Star's destroyed, the Emperor's dead and then the Empire has fallen and that's what we felt. In Star Wars, the war ends at Jakku. So here's the Executor. We know how the Executor ends. It ends up wedged crashing into the Death Star, so we know the fate of that ship. But yeah, like you say, maybe Solo has enough about him to bring Kira and the Underworld. This looks like the Underworld as well as the Rebellion.
Yeah.
Into that conflict, because clearly that picture is pre the end of Jedi. There's lots of thought processes that you could attribute to that picture. There's lots of potential ideas that could mean it's not just the Rebellion fighting back against the Empire at Endor. This isn't necessarily Endor. This could be anywhere. But you know what I mean? It could signal a lot of stuff.
It's just interesting what Charles Thrall kind of actually writes in his newsletter, kind of saying that this is like a three-part story that focuses on Kira and her ultimate goal, and she has like a doozy of a plan. So what that actually is and what her ultimate goal is, you know, is yet to be revealed. And I, for one, can't wait until we actually get more information about it.
I'm Anthony Daniels, and you are listening to Fantha Tracks. Well done.
So recently, John Williams appeared in Berlin on stage conducting, and at the end of the show spoke to the audience and revealed that within the next 1 or 2 weeks, and this was very recent concert, so this is imminently, he will start scoring the music for Indiana Jones 5. He did say you'll have to wait until next summer to hear it, and mentioned that the film was on schedule despite Harrison's injury. Just exciting news to think that John Williams once again is sitting down and preparing to write music. Obviously, he's done Star Wars 3 times over the last few years, and Galaxy's Edge as well, the music for that, and the theme for Solo. So he's been very busy in the Star Wars galaxy. We've not heard any Indiana Jones music from him since 2008 and Crystal Skull, but he's about to start again. Great to imagine that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a big surprise. I really wasn't expecting it, to be honest. I just kind of thought that maybe he had hung up his baton, but clearly he hasn't. So fair play to him. You know, the fact that he's still writing scores and wants to write and work on, you know, new productions at, you know, his age, Matt, is fantastic. It's only going to be a good thing for the film in general.
We're in a world now where 90-year-old William Shatner can fly into space.
Yeah.
and John Williams, who I think is pretty much the same age, give or take, is still conducting and still writing scores for movies. You know, Lucas is in his late 70s, Spielberg's in his mid-70s, Harrison Ford turns 80 next year. The age doesn't seem to be a hindrance. I guess you've got to balance a lot of other factors, but nevertheless, here we are. You've just turned 40, I've just turned 50. We've still got John Williams scoring movie soundtracks. We've still got Harrison Ford starring in action movies. Captain Kirk actually went into space.
Crazy, you know, isn't it?
What a great time to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose the thing is also a bit like I think he did with the sequel trilogy. He wrote all the score, but he didn't necessarily conduct all of it. You might find out here when it comes to the actual recording of it, he may not record all of it, but I'm sure he'll be, you know, that indie march, the first time we hear that main theme, that'll be John with his baton waving away, conducting people. So I can't wait to actually hear what he's written.
And please, Lucasfilm, give us a title. I want to call this film something other than Indiana Jones 5.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So for the past few years, Fantasy Flight Games have been the stewards of the Star Wars roleplay license. They recently let some of their line go over to Atomic Mass Games, who are now producing the miniatures. But it's recently been announced over the last few days that Edge Studios, which are part of the Asmodee group, are now taking over Star Wars roleplay, which means that they will be now running Edge of the Empire and some of the associate games. Also means that they can do reprints of previously released stuff. It's a new beginning for Star Wars roleplay. I think tremendously exciting because Star Wars roleplay has been a busy, active area for quite a few years, really, since Wizards had it, and then Fantasy Flight took it over, did great with it, and now 7 or 8 years on from Fantasy Flight taking it, it's now with Edge Studios. Roleplay, I used to do a lot of this back in the 80s, tabletop roleplay when West End Games had it, big part of Star Wars for me. Have you ever done much tabletop or gaming or anything like that, Star Wars roleplay?
Embarrassingly, no. Growing up, my social group, I was the Star Wars fan. In fact, I was like the Star Wars fan for my year group growing up through school and stuff. I never really had anyone to play with, which sounds pathetic. One of the first books I ever brought was it like the Star Wars Dictionary by Bill Slavish, whatever.
Slavicek.
There you go. Thank you very much. A lot of that was, you know, based from role playing and stuff like that. And it's something I've always been aware of and understand how it, you know, things from that went into Expanded Universe and obviously into New Canon. But I've never sat down and played it. When it comes to Fantasy Flight, I look at the models and go, that's really cool. Yeah. And, you know, the actual kind of like the models, I thought, well, maybe I might just actually start buying these just for the sake of, because the models of the ships and stuff look so accurate. But again, it's not kind of my wheelhouse. I just don't get time to really sit down and do it. And I don't have a group of friends who kind of do this stuff on a regular basis to make it easy for me to access it. You know, are you still playing? Do you still kind of do stuff then?
Not like I used to. It's such a shame. I mean, like I say, the 80s, you know, when people talk about the dark times, so 87 through to sort of 91 when the Empire and Dark Empire and all that kicked off. For us, that was as busy as ever for Star Wars, because West End released Star Wars the Roleplay Game in 87, and we were playing 2-3 times a week right through to sort of 94, 95. So, and it's one of those things that you don't know you're in the dark times until you're out of it sort of thing. But what now people refer to as that dark times period, which to me, really, if you look at the history, it was only 4 years. It's not, people talk about it like it was a decade. It wasn't. Yeah. It was 4 years at most. But for us, we were tremendously busy because we were writing our own stuff, coming up with our own locations, our own characters. We were 3 times a week, 2 hours a time, like solid Star Wars roleplay. Before there was an internet, distracted by other things, it just wasn't there. So it was huge fun, and it went on to Wizards of the Coast, did it. Didn't play much Wizards, a little bit, but not so much. And then Fantasy Flight again, but I'm a bit the same as you. My role-playing group, we all live miles apart from each other now. So, you know, John, who's our role-play editor, John Hicks, he's down in Northampton doing tremendously well down there. But for me, there's nobody nearby. So I'm a little bit the same. And I'm very curious to see what Edge are going to do when they pick up the license, because they can reprint previous stuff. Is that just Fantasy Flight stuff? Is that Wizard stuff? Is that West End stuff? I don't know what their remit is. It's going to be really interesting.
I mean, I suppose for me, like my role-playing really was Star Wars Galaxies and, you know, Star Wars The Old Republic, and maybe not, you know, Knights of the Old Republic to a degree, I suppose, as well, because that was kind of turn-based and stuff. So and a demographic where this probably appeals to. But also, at the same time, when I was at Collectomania, they had the Games Expo on, and the Games Expo was like twice the size of Collectomania and probably about 4 times as busy. And I was really surprised. And it's, you know, it's all down to education and understanding, like, you know, different fan groups and stuff like that. But I was like, I didn't realize there was just so many different types of role-playing games and board games and obviously, you know, magic and card games and trading games and all that kind of stuff. I know the, you know, the big ones, like everybody, you know, everybody knows what Warhammer is and what have you. But like some of these, I'm just like, I didn't realize there was A, such a big market for it. And B, that actually, you know, there's such a big community in the UK, which is, I think, fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It is great. There's a big community here. Roleplay is bigger than it's been for a long time, especially tabletop. But general roleplay has got huge again. It's gone through fallow periods and such. But at the moment, it's really on the up as a social game. It's doing fantastically well. So great news that Edge are taking it over. We'll definitely be following this closely on the site. There's going to be information coming out about what's going to be released and what's coming our way. We'll try and cover as much of it as we possibly can.
Hello, I'm Ahmed Best and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
We've had a number of months where we've had no live events happening. That's affected all corners of Star Wars. It's certainly affected events like Farthest From that we're a great fan of here on Fantha Tracks. My former co-host Dave has been running Farthest From since about 2012. Brilliant news that the show is going to be back. It's coming back on Sunday the 12th of December. On the day before, there's a Star Wars fan day, a fan fun day on the 11th. But on the 12th, it's Farthest From Retro Toy Show. His first guest has been announced. It's Matthias Rendahl, who wrote A New Proof and The Cro-Magnon Strikes Back. Great news that the show's happening. Great news that he's announcing guests. Dave's coming on the show soon. Are you going to be there, Mark?
Assuming it all goes horribly wrong and my gig in Greece, in Athens, I'm meant to be playing, gets cancelled, which is starting to look more and more likely. Yeah, I hope to be, because it's a great way, if you don't like spending money on your relatives and your family for Christmas, it's a great place to just go and spunk all your cash so you're broke before Christmas. There's just so much amazing vintage goodness. It's got such a nice family welcoming vibe there. It's, you know, it's very, very fun and stuff. And we've done it with URL and with 501st as, you know, troops before we've kind of attended and stuff like that, just to add a little bit of colour and a bit of interest to those who are attending and stuff. So I might be there with Fantha Tracks, or I might be there with the Rebel Legion, but either way, I'll be bringing my pocketbook. That's a fact.
It's true. I mean, anybody who's never been internationally as well, Dave and Farthest From have had people come from Europe. They've had people come from the States, all across the UK, of course. You see stuff here, I promise you, you will not see anywhere else. Some of the stuff in that dealer's room when it all gets up and running on the Sunday morning is mind-blowing. It's not a big room. It's very small and welcoming. Fording Bridge is a small village, but it's a beautiful place to visit in the New Forest. Dave couldn't be a better host. It's always a good show. gone back to having a two-day event. So there's the Star Wars Fan Fun Day on the Saturday. So there's stuff being planned for that. There's some nice restaurants in town on the Saturday night. So there's always places where you see folks go to different places, pockets of places to go. And then Sunday, the big day for Father Swamp. I'm so excited. And as I say, we'll have Dave on soon to talk up about what's going on, other guests that are coming as well. And Mark, it's another show that we're both going to be at, hopefully. So we're starting this whole sort of winter run of shows where we're going to keep bumping into each other after 18 months of not seeing each other at all.
I know, you're going to be sick and tired of seeing my ugly mush. So hopefully by then I might even have my Stormtrooper costume cleared with a UK garrison. So in that case, you won't see my ugly mush because it'll be hidden well behind a Stormtrooper helmet.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson and you are following Fanthatrax.
We have a listener's question and this week it's from Louis Turfrey. And he writes, if you were to choose absolutely the best and worst scenes in any Star Wars movies, what would they be and how would you correct them or do them differently?
Wow.
So that's a big, wide topic.
Okay. And I've got to say, I used to run lightsaber back in the day with Louis. In all of Star Wars, I'm going to say my favourite scene, this is weird because it's not something that you generally delineate down into like bests and worsts, but it's a good question to get you thinking. I'm going to pick the train heist scene in Solo because I think as an action sequence, everything about it is fun, action, busy, loads going on, and it's so good that when I think into it, I think the music's perfect, the visuals are fantastic, the peril is all there, the sacrifice is there from Val. You know, there's a little bit of everything in that scene, and then you get to the end of it, and Solo bottles it. It's a character development moment as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we know he dumps his cargo, which is what gets him into trouble in A New Hope, but we don't know the circumstances around him doing that. And Hannah's always known when to cut his losses, but you kind of think as he goes on into his career, there'll be a bit more nerve and it'll be a bit more bottle. You don't go flying into an astral field without having the confidence to think you could get through it, because who would do that? Nobody would do that. And his logic is, well, no one's crazy enough to do this, but I am. There's a confidence in his skills that he can do it. Han hasn't got the confidence in his skills quite yet at this point, because he hasn't even flown the Falcon really at this point. So there's a lot of stuff that's not formalized for him. So what would I do differently about that scene? I don't know. I don't think there's anything I would do differently about that scene. What would your favourite sequence be?
I don't want to cop out and say, I love them all. Yeah, do you know what? It's really difficult because actually,
it is.
I mean, for me, it's probably that Bespin duel for a number of reasons. I mean, there's things about Star Wars that I just love from kind of more of a me working in like TV and film kind of perspective. The scene in Revenge of the Sith where Anakin is like looking out over Coruscant, Padme's looking back, you know, the pathos which kind of goes with that. But yeah, for me, the Empire Strikes Back lightsaber duel is obviously it ends with the big reveal and the big cliffhanger. But also it's just the way that it's staged and how it's not completely frenetic. It's considered, you know, Vader's probing Luke's ability. You can kind of see that he's kind of like testing him and seeing like, actually, you know, how good is this kid? Is this kid actually really worth trying to convert him for the Emperor? It's just those different layers. And, you know, you kind of go further and deeper into like the bowels of Bespin. And it's almost like he's descending into hell a little bit. And, you know, like, Vader is just stood there waiting and he starts hurling stuff without having to actually pick anything up, which again, is just one of those great scenes because you've got Luke who's completely out of his depth at that point. He's weary and he's beaten and he's on the back foot, bearing in mind that in A New Hope he only just managed to kind of deflect the blaster bolts from the training remote. Now, you know, he's got massive chunks of carbon freezing apparatus being hurled at him and boxes and stuff. It just all works. And I think also because there's very little dialogue and what dialogue that's there is mainly Vader. So that is definitely my best scene. Okay, so what about your worst scene then?
That really is difficult. It's tough to pick a favourite because there's so many great moments, large and small. I guess in terms of worst scene, you'd have to kind of say worst executed or a scene that doesn't hold up. So given that logic, then thinking on the fly, I'd probably go back to Return of the Jedi Special Edition and the Jabba's Palace, the extra sort of Sy-Stootles sequence.
Oh, Jedi Rocks.
Jedi Rocks, because one, I don't like the music as much as I like the original. Latin Air, I much prefer that. And also, I think when CG really exploded in the 90s, and this was when me and Louis were doing websites, so we were talking about this stuff all the time. So when Special Edition came out, we were doing a site called Wire Zone, which became Lightsaber. So that came out and we were like, oh my God, moving live action Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
And we were blown away by it and it was the best thing ever. But I think we've learned as CG has advanced tremendously well, that early, it's not the earliest CG, but pretty early CG hasn't held up anywhere near as well, one, as the model effects did. So the CG looks weirdly off in those films now compared to even the model work that they did, but especially now. So you were just talking about the Luke Bespin scene, and you could look at that from Empire and go, okay, Solo was only made 3 years ago, so I can't imagine ILM making the Vandor sequence from Solo and making it look noticeably better. No. The visual effects artist might go, ah, they've corrected that. Ah, that's a little bit better. But to the general eye, you'd be like, looks the same to me. You wouldn't really be able to tell the difference. But I think if they went back and redid the Bespin sequence that you love so much, I think ILM would go, ah, well, we can do this now. We can do this now. We can add more depth to that. It won't just be guys off camera chucking boxes at Mark Hamill, which clearly it was. They can have a broader shot and the boxes flying at him. And, you know, there's things you can logically think that they could do to make it look even more impressive. Colin Skeeping doing the big flip and going through the window sort of thing. They wouldn't need to show the last moment. They could show a massive sequence of him hurling through the window and all that stuff. So there's obvious things like that that wouldn't make the scene any better. It'd just be a modern technical thing. But I think if they went back and redid Jedi Rocks, one, I wouldn't use that Jedi Rocks music. It sounds like it belongs on a Bruce Willis album. It doesn't sound like it belongs on a Star Wars soundtrack to me.
Yeah.
But that aside, visually now, a CG size Snootles would look so much better. But they wouldn't do that bit where she comes right up at the camera and kisses the camera. They wouldn't do the bit when Joey Hauser's doing the big yelling bit and he sees his tonsils waggling in the back of his mouth. That was like, let's kind of do something that looks like 3D but isn't. Let's show off the CG a little bit. There's bits in there that are very showy. In Star Wars Special Edition, when they see the ASP droid bash the little Imperial droid on the head. That silly little thing. So I don't need that in there. So there was bits that they did it just because they could. Ronto's covering up half the screen. We don't need to. Ronto's covering up anything in A New Hope. The fact that they were there was great. You know, they're a cool addition. I like Ronto's, but there was just an element of, look what we can do now. Well, look what we could do in 1997. We're in 2021 now. I think it's that conversation we had about go back on Disney Plus, wake up one morning, then have waggling air quote fingers fixed it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm going to say two, just because you spoke a lot about A New Hope. The Jabba the Hutt extra scene that they added in is probably in that similar kind of camp, partly because that whole conversation, we've just seen that with Greedo, just from a slightly different perspective. We don't really learn anything new other than the fact that Jabba the Hutt is a slug. And obviously we get that one semi-gratifying shot of Boba Fett. But the rest of the scene, there's a reason why it was left in the cutting room floor. I think even Paul Hirsch said it, you know, the acting was pretty bad to begin with. And I think it doesn't really work on any levels. Now, the one that I would probably say that I would definitely want to redo and really take another hard look at, it's going to be from The Last Jedi. I'm sure it's for one scene, but I think most people would like to redo, and that would be what's been, you know, now affectionately known as the Mary Poppins scene with Princess Leia floating back in from being held out into space. When you've seen it, you know, seen a film like loads of times, you pick up on stuff and you kind of notice that, for instance, when it's in a close-up of her face, clearly she's kind of rotating through space, it starts to slow down. But because it's on a close-up, you don't actually see that perspective. You just kind of just see it all from that weird angle when she kind of like, you know, flies in. You know, what would have been cooler would have actually been if she, like she did, she senses that, you know, there's going to be an impact because you see her taking it like a bit of a breath in to prepare herself, but then not actually even get out of the ship, literally just use a force to kind of like hold on to something and kind of like do it that way. I think it would be much better than the way they did it because it just felt badly executed. And it wasn't like a beautiful shot, but the idea and the concept behind it, I think, is great. At that point, it's amazing that, you know, we get to see Leia actually have some kind of force ability because obviously up to that point, we don't know how much she has or hasn't trained with Luke. That was probably the one scene that, when I watch, is probably the cringiest anyway, I think.
Just casting that question out to the listenership, you know, if there's any sequence, and this isn't an excuse to bash anything at all within Star Wars, but if there's any sequences that you love, any sequences that you're like, I wish they could redo that again, any cut scenes that you wish they could add in, or, like you've just said, the Solo sequence from A New Hope that you kind of wish they'd left out. If there's anything, drop us a line, leave us a voicemail. Just let us know. It's something we can certainly discuss because there's some fodder in there to chew over, I think.
Hi, this is Guy Henry and you're listening to Fantha Tracks. Enjoy.
Would you be up for, let's say, a remake of Caravan of Courage and Battle for Endor?
Yes. What I'd like for a lot of Star Wars, actually, and I thought this back when they started doing the Clone Wars, and you'd got the audio performances from, like, droids, for example.
Yeah.
Droids now looks really, well, it is. It's old style animation that was done on a budget.
Animation,
And you think with CG, you know, they could, and I much prefer, weirdly prefer the animated version of 3PO from then compared to the Clone Wars version of 3PO. I never, was never that taken with it. Of all the characters that could have kind of translated fairly accurately to the screen, 3PO and R2 were the two that you think they could kind of just be as they are, but they kind of stylized them a bit too much for me. Droid's version of 3PO was drawn as simply as they could possibly. Yeah, can we draw this entire character in 30 lines instead of 100 lines, which the real 3PO would clearly take? We're in the CG world now, so I kind of wish that they could do that with the audio performances and make it look better. Now you can take that forward to some of the audio dramas they're doing, like Aphra, like Tempest Runner, Dooku and stuff like that. They could do animated versions of that because the vocals are there. To your point, keep the performances of the actors, but you kind of redo some of the visual effects. So some of the visuals in Caravan of Courage are gorgeous. I mean, they really are gorgeous. Beautiful matte painting, some great concepts, but they put them on the floor. That village was on the floor because they couldn't afford to do it like they'd done it in Jedi a year before and put them up in the air. You could do that now. You could have them be in the Ewok village and, you know, the Ewok village, Bright Tree Village, I think it was called. So there's these ideas they've got, you know, that they could go back and revisit. Battle for Endor's makes me shudder. There's bits of it that are clever, but mostly just, they'd really have to go to town on that one. But I think, I think with certain visuals, certainly in the OT, not so much in the prequels, but even there, there's stuff that they could wouldn't hurt to have another run over. I think Attack of the Clones, I still maintain that they were right on the edge of their technological capacity.
For Attack of the Clones, absolutely. They were using prototype Sony HD cameras, digital cameras, which weren't even the image out of the camera at points was absolutely wrong from what I've been led to believe by people who worked at Sony and stuff like that. But I suppose this kind of end becomes into the wider question of at what point do you just embrace and accept a film for what it is versus should we then continually update a film that ultimately, you know, it's going to get dated just because of everything. Like subtle things that you wouldn't necessarily consider as a way of aging a film. Just the lenses, like the optics of the lens, you know, how good a quality that picture is. You know, you look at A New Hope compared to the picture quality of The Rise of Skywalker. There's a 40-year difference, so it's obviously things are going to change. But then I suppose you then throw in, well, is it better to remake something? Or is it just better to just come up with new content? That is ultimately, I guess, a big question that we will probably have to answer another time.
But Louis, thank you for the question, mate. I really appreciate it. Glad you're listening. Glad you're enjoying the show and sending in questions. So much appreciated as always.
Mark, how can they get in touch if they want to send us the thoughts?
Well, if you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit panthertracks.com or check out the free Panther Tracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@panthertracks.com. That's the place to send it. But you can catch us on social media. You can leave a voice message. There's loads of ways you can get questions to us. Whatever you do, get your questions to us. We will talk about everything. Comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at Panther Tracks. And be sure to subscribe. Leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Panther Tracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Maker Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to our weekly Panther Tracks news show, Good Morning Tatooine, live Sunday evenings, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube, and hopefully on Twitter as well. That's me done for this episode. It's been a fun one, though. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too, buddy. I'm going to let you go because I know you've got to run off to spend an evening with Bruce Dickinson, you lucky bugger. Have fun. And on that note, it's time for us to get out of here. So thank you very much for listening. Hopefully you'll join us for episode 112, which will drop next week. So until then, stay safe, take care, and may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanta Tracks Radio, it's Desert Planet Discs.